Merry Christmas.
Oh, happy holidays.
Oh, that's classy.
That's one of the words that people use to describe me.
Is it?
Oh, rude.
I don't know. Like, classy is not a word I use very often.
It's not. You should.
Maybe.
It's classy. It's classy to say classy. It's
like Jim in a tux.
We are talking about season 7, episode 11 and 12, which originally aired on December 9th, 2010, Classy Christmas. Steven, there's so much in this episode, but we do have a cold open, so let's talk about that.
It's a literal cold open. They're literally cold.
Ah! I was thinking that too. Thanks for making the same joke. Up high. High five. Woo! And then we can go through and talk about all of the other plots that are going on. Because, oh man, if I counted, let's see. We have in this episode an A plot, a B plot, a C plot, a D plot, and an E plot.
I think that's about right.
And an F plot. Oh. Yeah, there's so much. There's tons.
It's a lot. And people who may be new to our podcast, we do these joint episodes as one episode of our show, even though when you stream this, it's two different episodes. Clearly, it's one. Very often, these would air as one long episode on TV and then maybe get split up for streaming or even vice versa. There's a little bit of both in the history of The Office. So we just do them as one big, fun episode. But we should start at the beginning because that's where things begin. At the start.
So everyone is out in the parking lot and they are getting ready to take their holiday photo. And they have Nate at the camera and he is getting everyone ready. First, they take a normal picture. And like any group of office people, they decide to take a silly one. Everyone agrees on jumping, even though there were a couple other suggestions thrown out there. I believe Kevin had one that everyone rolled their eyes at.
Oh, I got it. You guys, how about this? Michael, what if all the boys are on one side, all the girls are on the other? The boys are like, why yada? And the girls are like, let's go shopping.
And it doesn't go so well.
It does not go very well. It reminds me of season 2 when they try to take a group picture and Michael has to Photoshop everybody's heads on.
Because no one can smile because that was right. Like a bad day.
Yes, that is conflict resolution. My all-time favorite Office episode.
Let's just jump in the air.
That's it. That's a picture. Yes, jump in the air. We're going to jump in the air. Here we go.
Okay.
Yeah, so they struggle. They're jumping at different times. They ended up not getting it, as we learn later. I do like Pam's chiming in of like, hey, it's a Christmas card from people's office supply vendor. Not going on the refrigerator. It's okay. But everyone's very excited.
Pam has gradually become kind of the voice of reason in a lot of these episodes since her office administration job and since her relationship with Michael has gotten closer. And we see that a lot in this particular episode. She really has, she's much more in charge than she has ever been before. And I really like seeing this side of Pam. It's definitely the natural progression of her maturity from kind of being this more cowering person behind the reception desk as she was before and just kind of accepting things happening and rolling her eyes and maybe making jokes with Jim about it. Now she's taking this more active role in directing the focus and trying to like get everybody back on track. She's really being the ringmaster here a little bit more than anybody else.
Yeah, and we see that really. It's interesting in different ways. So there's some emotional stuff with Michael. We also learned that she's taken over and then dismantled the party planning committee. We're seeing her evolve and become more assertive. And I love this side of Pam. I think people who don't like this about her character arc are incorrect.
Who would that be? Who hates seeing somebody gain confidence? Like, that's kind of crazy.
Dudes on the internet.
Ugh,
who are jerks.
We don't care. No,
so,
no.
Let's get into the Christmas party stuff. How about that?
Yeah, let's leave those jerks in Reddit.
That's right. So we learned that Pam has shut down the party planning committee. It was toxic political stunts used to make people feel miserable and left out. As you said, at the best, at playing parties.
And she really streamlines this whole party planning thing, as she says she's now getting paid to basically head the party planning committee as the office administrator. And when Michael comes in asking how everything's going, he asks if they are over budget, which I believe is a reference to another Christmas episode. I kind of like that each of his questions references an older holiday episode.
How's the party coming along?
Great.
Are we over budget?
Nope.
No? Good. Did anyone get drunk already?
Not yet.
Good for you. Angela, lay it on me. What's the problem?
Nothing. Should be fun.
So, Stanley, how big is the bug up your butt today?
Pam got those sugar-free cookies I like. I'm doing fine.
All right. Well, I will be in my office making toys for the good children. Andy?
Yeah?
What you got?
All good, Santa.
And the answer to all of them are no. Pam basically has it handled.
Yeah, all the people who would normally be upset about something, they're all fine. Everybody's cool. Michael's looking for drama. He wants drama. He looks a little disappointed in his office that everything's under control. But Pam's got it. Got everything running smoothly.
Oh, I found the list of what they specifically referenced. So the are we over budget? That was the original Christmas party. Did anyone get drunk already? Moroccan Christmas. Angela, lay it on me. What's the problem? And that is a Benihana Christmas, because that was everything was a problem during that party. So I thought that was pretty funny that he's bringing it back to all the other Christmas episodes.
We should say, too, that our incomparable member episode...
For Christmas.
Yeah, we talked about all of the Christmas office episodes with our respective partners. It was a lot of fun. So you and I both had some deja vu watching and preparing for this episode. I was like, I feel like I just saw this because we did. So if you want to see more about how this interacts with other Christmas episodes, what we think about all of them, and you're an incomparable member, you can go back and find that.
Yeah, I will put it into our show notes.
Awesome.
Somehow, if you are a member, the link will work. If you are not, you should sign up to become a member, and then the link will work. So, win, win, win.
Oh, another conflict resolution nod. I love it. Kelly and Gabe are also involved in Christmas in the office. Remember, Kelly is in the minority leadership training program, and it seems like they don't really know what to do with her. So she suggested, hey, what if I get gifts for everybody? And she gets everybody a Hello Kitty laptop case. Doesn't go over super well. Some people don't have laptops. Some people don't like Hello Kitty. Pam says the folks in Nashua got MP3 players. So that's a lot better than a laptop case. It's also a little nod to what's coming, I think, later in the episode.
Also a little reference back to one of the original Christmas episodes.
Yes, absolutely, where there was an iPod floating around.
Yep.
And so, yeah, Gabe wanted to give everybody fleece blankets. He and Aaron use theirs a lot. The camera crew apparently keeps asking Gabe if they're still dating, which I find really funny.
Yes, Aaron and I are still dating. Why do you ask me so often if we're still dating?
So... with us discussing this episode and all the references and all of the good writing and the good jokes, we should mention that this episode is written by Mindy Kaling, and it was directed by Rainn Wilson.
Ah, very cool. I think we have just come to agreement that the episodes that Mindy wrote are our favorites.
Yeah, they're all, I think so.
They're so good and they're so dense. I mean, there's not a moment in this episode that doesn't have something going on.
Yeah, it is a very busy episode, and she writes the Holly-Michael relationship really well. I like the way she puts them together, and the dynamics between them feel really realistic, and so I enjoy her writing of that couple. So we should actually, before we get all the way into it, let's outline kind of where our plots are, and that way we can follow some of these through lines, because like you said, a lot happens, and I believe that the main thing that happens, kind of our A plot, is that Holly will be coming back, but we will get into how that happens. So we have, let's see, so that's what I think is our A plot.
Agreed.
Is that Holly's coming back.
Yes.
We have a B plot going on with some snowballs. Mm-hmm. And then some minor little plots sprinkled out. We have Daryl and Jada, his daughter. We have Toby and the jury, which kind of connects over to the A plot, but it has it's a little bit of extra scenes here and there with just Toby. And we have Angela and the senator.
State senator. He's a state senator.
The senator.
Oh, right. The state senator.
Angela and the state senator, which is the beginning of that wonderful running joke for basically the rest of time. And then we also have Pam and the Christmas gift she's made for Jim, the Bear Man comic.
Yeah, that's about what I have too. So
cool. So right away, as we are seeing Pam now as head of the party planning committee, as Pam doing her job, let's put it that way. it seems like today is the day of the party. But as we find out, Toby has a bit of an announcement after Pam is going over the rules in the conference room about the party and about what should be expected or not expected and what people should and should not do, which I like that she's outlining all of these do's and don'ts for the party.
Before we kick off the party, I just want to remind everyone that an office party is just that.
Yeah!
A party. It's not an excuse to get really drunk or confront someone or have a cathartic experience of any kind.
Pam.
Wow, there are questions to that? Okay. You know what? No questions. Last item on the agenda, Toby would like to make an announcement.
Toby gets up and announces that he is taking a small leave of absence in order to serve on a jury. And this jury, we find out from some basic miming skills of Toby, is for the Scranton Strangler. And that he's going to be replaced by Holly for a little while. This totally changes the course of the episode in this conference room. It starts off, we think we're going to be having this holiday party where everything is functioning. And then Toby's announcement just avalanches the whole thing.
Which is sort of this reversal. Normally it's Michael making some announcement and it derailing everything. Creed is excited. We can't miss Creed's response.
She's one sassy black lady.
Holly's coming back, everybody, and we have to have a party.
and Michael is just really excited about this. He clearly isn't over her, and we've seen this building for quite a while, right? When he and Pam go on their tour of the other branches, he steals that letter from Holly's computer. He takes part of her sweater, and he is just so thankful that the Strangler is letting Holly come back.
And know who I end up owing this to is the Scranton Strangler. Thank you. Thank you, Scranton Strangler. I love you. You just took one more person's breath away.
He wants to cancel Pam's party. He wants to save all this up and do a party that coincides with Holly's return.
Yeah, so it kind of is Michael's fault in the end that the party ends up being steamrolled. He tries to start throwing everything away. Everyone is yelling like, no, we could do something different. He insists on paying for it.
Cancel this one. Dwight, get rid of the tree.
Okay.
Cancel. We're canceling it.
No,
we have to cancel the party.
No.
We're going to get fresh for Holly. Fresh and new.
These cookies are fine.
It's not. They're not. Michael, fresh and new.
Michael, wait. We don't have the budget for another party.
Well, then everybody will chip in. It'll be fine.
I honestly think you're idealizing people here again, Michael. I don't think that's going to happen.
You know what? I'll pay for it. I'll pay for the party. It doesn't matter. This is way too important. People, Holly's coming back, and this is the most important Christmas party of my life. So back to work.
He is just absolutely over the moon that this has happened. Mm-hmm. And he then torpedoes Pam's party and it gets pushed back. And so it seems like that they kind of let it happen because they really can't stop this runaway train that Michael is on, because this is what he wants for Holly's return.
Yeah. And there's such an obvious way this could have gone. They could have had Pam's nice party and done something else when Holly came, but he wants to combine them. And we see that Michael's take on this new party is going to be classy. It's right there in the title. of the episode. So everything is, it's very grown up.
It looks beautiful in here. It's super classy. It's like a party for limousine drivers.
So all the Christmas lights are white. There's no multicolored, you know, sort of fun, traditional, more family-like decoration. He is in a black and red suit, no big Santa beard, you know, kind of a classy hat.
He's in like a Santa smoking jacket made out of like crushed velvet.
That's exactly what it is. It's what Santa slips into December 26th, once all the gifts are given.
He's a cool, sleek Santa, as he says.
Yeah. Young and hip. Angela is there hemming Michael's pants as he's explaining to the camera what this new party is. And she chimes in that she's going to bring her new boyfriend, as long as there's not any press at the party. And again, we're setting up this thing where Angela is putting Robert's career up on a pedestal. And I'm not saying that he hasn't done good work as a state senator, but she's making a much bigger deal of it than it actually is.
Yeah, Angela also likes a little fancy. And I think that that's what she's feeling these days. We could just dip into that tiny bit of the plot with Angela and the senator, state senator. Because I think like for a long time, she has felt like, not like a nobody, but like maybe that she deserved a little bit more or some, you know. And now she's getting like this tiny, tiny, tiny little taste of this public life and being kind of an important figurehead. As she mentions, she went to a ribbon cutting ceremony and there were like two cameras there and that like absolutely thrilled her.
Do you have any idea how many photographers there are at a ribbon cutting ceremony? I do. Two. Angela, over here. Angela, here. Look here.
She mentions going to the comptroller, a party thrown by the comptroller's wife. Kevin makes a joke about nobody knowing what a comptroller is.
Oh my gosh, Kevin. That's basically what Angela is for the branch.
I mean, really, it's one of those things like the first time that you heard about like a comptroller, you're like, are you saying that wrong?
Oh no. Yeah, totally. I remember very clearly the first job I had where there was a comptroller. I was like, wait, what does she do? She's in charge of all the money.
Yeah, yeah. But that's exactly this type of thing that Kevin should know, being in accounting.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be impressive if anyone knew what a comptroller was.
So yeah, Angela is, she's quite beaming throughout this whole episode. She is, she's going through this new exciting time with this man in her life. And even though we know where things go for those of us who have binged watched this 1,000 times, I'm kind of happy for her in this episode.
Yeah.
I'm happy she's happy.
No, and she deserves it, I think. I mean, she's done some terrible things to Andy and Dwight.
I was like, does she deserve it?
Maybe she doesn't deserve it, but
I just think everyone deserves happiness.
Everyone deserves a chance. You know, after a duel, everyone deserves a second chance. But we see immediately that's going to start to break down. We will get to that as the party unfolds. One of my favorite details about Michael's classy Christmas party is that instead of hiring a quartet for like half an hour, you can just pay a bass player to come for the whole day. And so there's just this guy playing upright bass in the corner of the conference room the entire episode. And we kind of hear it as people filter in and out of the conference room. I love it.
There's nothing classier than boring jazz music. I am here to tell you.
It does become like background noise for the episode. You don't really realize that it's just always playing. Because it is kind of like mellow. I'm glad he picked the bass player as opposed to any of the other string quartet people. I think the bass really, it does class it up a bit.
It does. I say this as a former bass player. We're classy people.
You are a classy people. And as Michael points out, that boring jazz music is very classy.
It is. He knows what he's talking about.
I mean, I can't really deny it. It's kind of true.
Yeah. So at this point, Michael discovers that the tree is artificial, even though Pam has stuck one of those like smelly good tree things that you put on your car to make it smell mm-hmm. like pine. And he's like, you got to go get a live tree. A live tree is what's classy. And this is where we begin to learn about what Daryl's going through this holiday. And it's pretty brutal. I mean, it's pretty tough. And so Daryl's daughter, Jada, basically has told her mom, Justine, that she doesn't want to necessarily spend Christmas with Daryl because it's not as much fun. And that really hurts Daryl. I mean, he's really, you know, understandably so, upset and hurt about this. And he doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to talk to anybody about it. But it being Andy and Pam who are on this assignment and they need Daryl because they need his truck, it's really this like little group of people who kind of work together to fix this. And it's another example of Pam kind of working in other people's lives to like help kind of smooth things out. And we see her do that with Michael, but now we're also seeing her do it with Daryl.
Jada don't want to spend Christmas with me. She told her mom it wasn't as much fun. And how could she say that? You know, I took her to the toy store to buy her own presents.
Well, Daryl, no kid wants to buy their own Christmas present.
Her mom wants me to take her to Mass. I guess that's something to do.
No, you should have her mom do the boring Christmas stuff on her time. You should be associated with the fun parts of Christmas.
How do I do that?
Bring her to the party. Yeah, we'll have Santa and we'll play games with her. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yes.
You'll be Mr. Christmas by the end of the night.
Even though this little plot line is, it's pretty tough, especially if you like lived through this as a kid or maybe as like a single parent or something. It's very real and relatable, but I do love where it ends up. And that's through the effort of Pam and Andy kind of working on Daryl and coaching him through this.
Yeah, and they especially set it up that Daryl, in the beginning of the episode, he's so excited to have Jada join him for Christmas. So he's really quite blindsided by the idea that she didn't have fun last time she was visiting him. And that is really crushing because I feel like he's trying so hard to make things fun for her. But Daryl's idea of what she might have wanted and what might have been fun was not actually what she thought was fun. So that was really, really quite sad. And later on in the episode, when we see her showing up to this classy Christmas party that, like you said, is now very adult, it has the white lights, there's nothing like whimsical about it. Michael is dressed as like, you know, Hugh Hefner Santa. And it isn't the type of party that a kid would find fun, but this is the party that she finds herself in now. And mm-hmm. it does get like, it's tricky to watch, but I like where this plot line ends up, which we'll talk about when we start closing out the episode.
Yeah.
So I guess since we are diving into some of the other plot lines, we should talk about the start of Jim and Dwight's snowball war. I don't like to even call it a fight because it does become a war with tiny little battles throughout the entire episode. But Jim is bored. He is, you know, playing drums on his desk. He's looking around. He still has nothing to do. So yep. We're still watching the Jim of how we've seen the previous couple episodes where he's reached his commission cap. So he's just not working. Oh, my quick question for you here is, why hasn't Dwight reached his commission cap? Isn't he like always top salesman?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't know.
You know what? He's probably also busy managing the building. So he's just always much busier now. So maybe. Yeah, I'm gonna say that's what's up with Dwight.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. So it begins to snow. And this is back when Pam's party was gonna be happening.
Hey, it's snowing.
Oh my God. It's the first snowfall of Christmas. Is that just so magical for you, little girl? Can you not wait to have a hot chocolate and cuddle up with Papa and tell him about all your Christmas dreams? It's not even real snow. Look, it's dusting. It's pitiful.
And so Jim goes out, scrapes enough for a snowball, and hits Dwight with it in the face. Dwight freaks out, but everyone's kind of making fun of him for freaking out about it. And that's what sets off this snowball war, as you said. You're right, it's not a snowball fight. It's set to happen at noon on the day of Michael's Christmas party. because snow's really coming down now. I guess Dwight's point was, it's not enough snow for this. We need to wait till a day where it's kind of the real first snowfall. And at noon, Jim goes out there to meet Dwight, but Dwight's not there. Dwight doesn't answer his phone, and there's a lone snowman built in the parking lot. And Jim turns to go back into the building and sees that the doors are only locked, but they're like chained shut. Hope there's not a fire inside. And at that point, he realizes that something is getting ready to happen to him. And Dwight busts out of the snowman. I have a lot of questions about how long he was in there. He's in like thermal gear. So my assumption is that Nate built this snowman around Dwight. And Dwight's just been hanging out for a bit.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. I like that backstory there.
Yeah, of course it was Nate. And
of course.
And Dwight just unloads on Jim. Jim falls to the ground. He is just getting pummeled by snowballs. At one point, Dwight, like, he doesn't kick him, but, like, puts his boot up on Jim's hip. Like, he totally dominates him. And Jim, we see Jim a few minutes later coming in with, like, a bloody nose. His hair's all messed up. Dwight owned him.
I have no feeling in my fingers or penis, but I think it was worth it.
He really did. This is definitely one of the few times that we get to see Dwight have the upper hand over Jim. We have been seeing Jim kind of take the back role in the office the last couple episodes. And in this one in particular, you know, Jim is getting bested over and over and over. And this is just the start. Jim absolutely gets ruined by Dwight and his snowballs. And I like that he is upstairs and he's kind of nursing his bloody nose up in the kitchen after this absolute pummeling. And Dwight sends him a text.
And then how about icing it? LOL. Dwight.
Thought that was actually a really good... That's a text. Like, that's a good text.
Yeah.
It's brutal. Dwight is brutal, but I can't say that, you know, over the years, I mean, yeah, I don't want to see have anyone, you know, get a bloody nose or anything like that. That's really aggressive. But I don't know. Over the years, it's kind of been coming to Jim.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of anger pent up in this for Dwight.
Dwight's kind of having a lot of sadistic fun with it as well. Like, he's really into the idea that he is one-upping Jim in this snowball battle.
Mm-hmm.
So now that Jim is bloodied and in fear for his life, we should definitely talk about the main plot, the event we have all been waiting for, and that's Holly's arrival.
Hi.
Hello.
Is there any way I can get a hand with these, please?
I'm really sorry. I can't help you. I'm waiting for my boss's pretty friend to arrive.
There she is. Hey. Erin, would you help her, for God's sake?
Oh, you're Holly. Of course. Sorry.
Erin doesn't get it.
No.
Erin does not get it at all.
Yeah, Michael tells her to wait for his attractive friend. Holly, like, walks up with boxes, and Erin's like, oh, I'm waiting for my boss's attractive friend. She doesn't see what Michael sees in Holly. In fact, there's a little moment later on where she's telling him that he would be better off with somebody else. Like, she just isn't having it for whatever reason. But Holly does show up, and they have this super weird, like, doing voices, doing characters.
Well, well, well. It isn't Michael Scott, you old bastard.
Well, I never thought I'd see your face around these parts, you old bastard.
Well, I did show my face around these parts, you old bastard.
Why, you're some sort of wise guy, huh?
I most certainly am.
Oh,
homie.
Okay. Holly's back.
Very uncomfortable to me. Very uncomfortable to Jim, who tries to, like, speed them along in this. He's like, okay, come on. And they hug, and they sort of reconnect a little bit, and it's clear pretty quickly that Michael is under the assumption that she has broken up with AJ because she's returned to Scranton. And we learned that what happened when she moved back to Nashua is that she broke it off with Michael. And so he just has this in his mind that that's what's going to happen this time. And it's not what has happened this time. In fact, AJ and Holly are living together. She brings this Woody doll from Toy Story that he gave her. And he's really taken aback by this. And at first he holds it in, but we will see that he acts out in frustration about this.
Yeah, Michael is absolutely crushed to find this out. And so this episode, the progression of Michael's grief when it comes to the idea that, like, he isn't going to be just jumping, you know, back into a relationship with Holly. It starts off with, like, the typical Michael way of reacting, the childish, vindictive things that he does, like the Woody doll gets thrown into the garbage and he pours all kinds of condiments all over it out of spite because he's so angry.
Yeah,
that
he's
she
a child.
Is still
he's
with,
acting like
yeah,
a child. Absolutely.
But he eventually, like, pulls it together. And that's what I love about this episode is that we see Michael acting in this way. And then he turns himself around after he has, like, this really cathartic moment of telling Holly in front of everybody why he is upset.
Okay. You know what, Holly? I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident. An accident born of jealous feelings. When you got transferred and I drove you up to Nashua, you said, Michael, I love you, but I can't do this. But then with this other guy, you don't have any problem with a long distance relationship, do you? And you know what? That is what is the matter with me.
Michael, I'm sorry.
And we did this whole stupid party for you.
And everyone in the office is totally on Michael's side for this. And after that kind of outburst and, like, all of the airing of the grievances, really, he kind of turns it around. We see him cleaning up the Woody doll. He feels bad for what he's done, but he channels his frustration in a much more mature way. I mean, even before all of this reveal, he makes up a fake girlfriend, which again is a very, very childish thing to do. He then, you know, double backs on that and admits that she was fake. There is a lot of things going on with Michael where we see the old Michael reacting kind of at a, like, a knee-jerk reaction the way he used to. And then we are seeing our new kind of more mature, more patient Michael follow up at the end of this episode where he then turns things around. And part of that is thanks to a heart-to-heart he has with Pam.
Yeah, there's this really great moment between the two of them. She notices Michael slip out of the party, and I think he's going to leave and just kind of leave for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes downstairs, and the moment opens actually where he doesn't want her to slip on the ice, so he, like, holds her hand as she comes across, like, the, you know, like, sort of the icy slush that's outside of office buildings and on sidewalks and stuff. And she tells him that she has learned that AJ hasn't committed to Holly and that she is going to basically tell him that he needs to propose or it's going to be over.
Oh, okay, Michael, slow down. Everything's going to be okay.
No, it's not. It's not. Oh, man, I can tell you confidently that it is not going to be okay.
I shouldn't tell you this, but AJ won't commit to Holly. And she's going to tell him that if he doesn't propose to her by the end of the year, it's over.
Really?
Really. And I don't know about you, but I don't know a lot of happy marriages that start off with an ultimatum, do you?
No.
So, just be patient.
Yeah, I mean, I can wait till then.
They reflect on the fact that they can't think of many marriages that have started with an ultimatum like that, and that Michael, if he waits, may have an opening. And that hope isn't dead for this. And it's just really nice because Pam doesn't build him up in a way that's false, right? I think she's just kind of laying out the facts for him. And he didn't know about the AJ angle, but now he sees a glimmer of light in the tunnel, I think.
Yeah, and there is this a scene that kind of follows up or reinforces this hope that Michael has, because AJ does show up as like a surprise for Holly and really a surprise for everybody. He discovers that the Woody doll has been
vandalized.
There you go. Vandalized is the perfect word for it. And he asks Holly what happened. At the same time that this is going on, Michael is in the cubicle next to Holly's desk, kind of talking with Kelly, and they're overhearing what Holly is going to say happened. And you think that Holly is going to be throwing Michael under the bus, but instead she explains that it was an accident and it was her fault.
Hey, what happened to Woody?
Oh, okay, get ready for this. You're not going to believe it. I was making salad, and he fell right into the dressing. I mean, there was a salad dressing all over him.
He smells awful.
It was blue cheese dressing.
Great.
But she doesn't throw Michael under the bus. She doesn't bring him into this. And I think that that is a real hopeful moment for Michael.
Yeah.
I like that they added that in there, that the writing and the directing, like that they put that moment in there, that Michael not only gets the reassurance from Pam, like the hearsay about the ultimatum, but that he also hears firsthand accidentally, like from Holly herself, that she isn't bad-mouthing Michael. But now Michael knows that she doesn't hate him, right? And she's not angry at him, and she doesn't want to see him hurt.
Yeah, and she had every reason to throw Michael under the bus, especially if you like. I kind of think AJ showing up was like maybe defense against Michael a little bit.
Oh, yeah, to completely.
And through that angle, her not telling him about Michael is very interesting. And it definitely piques Michael's interest. And I think it reinforces what Pam told him, that, hey, there is a chance here. There may be an opening.
And then we also get this wonderful little camera catch at the end of the episode where we get to see a little hopeful moment from Holly's perspective, because now that Michael has had a moment to reflect on this, he overheard Holly, he had the heart-to-heart with Pam, he gets back into his regular Santa costume and he is having a moment with Jada, and Jada's sitting on his lap and she's asking for Christmas presents. Holly sees Michael being like absolutely amazing with kids, right? Mm-hmm. She catches Michael's endearing side and him just like being himself. And you see a little bit of a smile or a heartwarming moment from Holly, that she's seeing this from Michael. She's not seeing this from AJ. And so it seems like that even though she is with AJ and they're together, they seem to be together because of situation and not because of the friendship, the affection, the compatibility that she had with Michael.
Yeah, I think that's right. And she had mentioned earlier when she was telling some of the women in the office about this idea of the ultimatum, is that she does want kids, which I think makes her catching Michael kind of in that paternal role with Jada all that more powerful. Yeah, it's great. And I like that we see it from both sides. I feel like if only Michael or if only Holly had had these moments, it would be unbalanced. With both of them having them, we now see that there is something on both sides of the coin. Even though Holly told Michael directly that she doesn't feel that way anymore, that's not actually true. And as viewers, I'm glad we get to see both of them kind of in the same space.
Yeah. And this, even like, this is her first episode back, and we are getting so many little breadcrumbs about their relationship already. I mean, even when she's describing having the Woody doll from AJ, she was saying that he never seen Toy Story. And that right away, as the viewers, were like, how could she be with someone that hasn't seen Toy Story? Like, Michael would be obsessed with Toy Story. Holly would be obsessed with Toy Story. Like, they are obviously so compatible in that region of the things that they find funny and the jokes. Like, we haven't seen AJ, you know, doing funny voices, making crazy jokes, being affectionate or friendly to, like, kids. Like, it's, there's so much that Michael has going for him that I think Holly is super attracted to, and vice versa. And we are repeatedly seeing that that isn't something in AJ, and that we just kind of, like, see AJ trying a lot, which makes him a good person, right? Like we see him being interested in things Holly's interested in, but we're constantly fed these little trinkets of this isn't, like, the perfect match here as much as Holly and Michael were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. AJ seems boring. I don't think Holly likes boring.
Yeah. I think AJ's just, like, nice and there. That's how I feel about AJ. that would be written in his Rolodex. Nice. There.
Real quickly, I do want to touch base on some other gifts we see exchanged.
Oh, yes. There's such a good little gift-giving montage. Oh, take us through it, Chancellor.
Kevin got Oscar some Ugg boots.
I'm sorry. It's so good.
It is good. Phyllis knitted Ryan a case for his iPad. So again, a nod to earlier Christmas episodes where we learned Phyllis knits.
With Pisces on it. And Ryan loves it.
He does. He's amped.
That's his thing about this montage, is that everyone seems to really love their gifts, except for Michael too, Kelly, at the end. But yeah, everyone seems to be really pleased and happy with the gifts. It's it's a successful Christmas party.
Angela got Creed a pack of deodorant. Like the pack you kind of buy at Costco. It's like 8 things of deodorant.
And I think it's Old Spice, too, right? Like, it's so good for Creed.
Aaron got Andy a little booklet on how to quit biting your nails. So, Andy's excited about that. Meanwhile, Dwight continues to give Jim Christmas presents, in a sense. we see later on Jim is at the fax machine and returns to his desk. And we see Pam walking in from the kitchen. She's not wearing her sweater that she's been wearing the rest of the episode. And so Jim spins around to find out that Dwight is wearing the sweater and a wig. He has a wig for every single person in the office, by the way.
Oh, God, I love that detail so much. Mm-hmm. I think that that's one of the best parts of this episode, is that reveal and the little the shots of him wearing every single wig and turning around in the chair. Oh, that's so good.
Yes, I have a wig for every single person in the office. You never know when you're going to need to bear a passing resemblance to someone.
We see Dwight as Pam, Meredith, Kevin, and Stanley. And again, he just pummels Jim with more snowballs.
From fake Pam.
From fake Pam.
Which is extra upsetting.
Very.
And everyone in the office just kind of watches it happen. He's maniacally laughing. Jim is feeling quite terrorized.
He is. He's going to try to get back, though. So he has a lacrosse stick.
Sports gym.
Sports gym. I looked this up. If you were good at lacrosse, you can launch a lacrosse ball out of a stick at over 100 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So Jim has a snowball in there, and he's waiting for Dwight. He ends up launching it, but misses Dwight and breaks the window in the conference room.
Hold on 1 second. Excuse me.
This leads to a conversation with Holly and Michael in Michael's office.
You guys, this has to stop. Someone could have really gotten hurt.
What if Meredith was taking her smoking break below that window? You know what would have happened? The shards of glass would have shaved her face right off. And yes, it might have been funny, but it also would have been incredibly tragic.
I could not agree more. And I just want to state for the record that I am intending to sue Jim for acute psychological distress.
What are you talking about? You're the one terrorizing me.
With snowballs, Jim? With fluffy little snowballs? No, I thought we were just playing.
Dwight's right. What you did was dangerous and inappropriate. I'm really surprised at you guys. Last time I was here, you were both best friends.
I love the way they kind of like look at the cat. They're like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
And Jim's sitting there with like blood on his shirt.
Yeah, right.
Like, still from the first attack.
Yeah, very clearly, Jim should not have done what he did, with the lacrosse stick, but also Dwight's out of control as well. Holly was just distracted by Michael, I guess, last time she was there. This is where we get the story, by the way, about Michael making up a fake girlfriend named Tara in New York. He makes up the story. Dwight and Jim are like, what are you talking about? It's very clearly made up. But this talk doesn't really work because Dwight continues with a little box on Jim's desk.
Hey, Pickles. Merry Christmas. Open immediately. Love Swiss cheese.
Damn it, Dwight!
Didn't think your affectionate nicknames would be your undoing, did you, Jim? Let that be a lesson to you all.
Again, Dwight is using Pam as like as a decoy here, and Jim opens up the box and it's rigged with a snowball that goes right into Jim's face. I mean, it's kind of great. That's really funny, although it looks like it hurts.
Yeah.
It does look like it hurts.
I think that sucker's like spring loaded big time. I mean, it just launches at him. Yeah, Jim is just like full on terrorized at this point. When he meets Pam in the break room later, he's like poking at ceiling tiles to make sure that Dwight's not in the ceiling and there's not a trap somewhere. Maybe because he's used Pam as bait these other times. Maybe he's just assuming that something bad will happen.
I don't think he's in the ceiling, babe.
Well, I don't think any of us really know.
Dwight is under his skin in a way that we don't normally see.
There aren't any more snowballs after the gift that is spring-loaded and hits him in the face, but we do see the rest of the episode Jim suspecting that there are snowballs everywhere. And I guess we should go right into it. As he is leaving one of the very last scenes of this episode, they go out, you know, Jim and Pam are kind of some of the last two people to leave. And as they're going out into the parking lot, they come upon a field of snowmen. The faces on these snowmen absolutely kill me. They all have like this like, ooh, like
they're so surprise scary. Face.
I love them. They're so funny, scary. Like there's so many of them. They are so dense and well constructed. And it looks like there could be a person hiding in them because they're very, very similar to the original snowman that Dwight jumped out of and attacked Jim. But this time the parking lot is basically empty except for Jim and Pam's car. And the parking lot is full of snowmen. I think Nate was out there like all evening making snowmen.
That's what he was doing during the party. He wasn't at the party. He was making snowmen. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And okay. Pam's like, oh, God, I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
No, no, no,
and
no.
He like pushes her towards the car. He starts stabbing them with his umbrella, beating them with his man bag.
Okay, this is it.
What?
Go.
What is this? What?
Go, go.
Oh, my God. Honey.
And Dwight is on the roof, and it's where we get this excellent quote from Dwight.
In the end, the greatest snowball isn't a snowball at all. It's fear. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I love that he is up there like a Bond villain. He's basically like, I wish he were almost holding a snowball, stroking it like I think Dr. No or whoever it was. But yeah, it is. It's fantastic shot there. It's like kind of foggy and he's in his Dwight's, you know, winter wear. I love the Dwight winter wear. It's so iconic, just like his mustard shirts. And it is a really fantastic closer for not only this plot, but basically the whole episode. And Jim gets away. You know, he doesn't get any more snowballs in the face, but as Dwight says, it's the fear was Jim's real gift this Christmas.
But dude is definitely going to have some issues.
He's a little shaken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, snowball fights aren't going to be the same with his kids after this one.
Pam and Jim do exchange Christmas gifts before they leave.
Yes. Yeah. We'll put the snowball terror aside and we will go to the sweet, wonderful Jim and Pam Christmas exchange, because they don't get included in the montage of everyone else's. We do have a whole separate scene, because we should say before we reveal their gifts to each other that Pam has been going around the office for most of the episode because she has made a comic book for Jim, and it's called The Adventures of Jimmy Halpert. And she made this whole thing where he turns into a bear, and it's a full on comic book, and she's so very, very proud of it. And she's going around to everyone in the office to kind of, I know she's fielding their opinions on it, but I also understand the idea of being very proud of something you made and wanting to show off to the people in your life this thing that you made and get some praise for it, right? Like, that's what she is after. But that's not what she keeps getting. She goes over to Ryan first, and he starts making some critiques about it. And obviously, Pam can't change anything about it now. Even though Pam did go to him asking his opinion, he doesn't just shower her with praise about it. He makes some criticisms.
So cool, right?
There's no connection between the origin story and the quest.
Okay.
We need to know who Jimmy Halpert was before he was bitten by the bear. Otherwise, it's the bear's quest.
Okay, well, I just sort of meant, like, cute, right?
Well, did you come here for help, or did you come here for me to tell you how great it is?
I mean, help if it's something simple, like add page numbers or laminate it.
Oh, it sounds like you know what you want.
But, you know, that's Ryan. She leaves that interaction very disappointed. She tries to show it to Phyllis. Phyllis just doesn't understand what she's even looking at. So it's obvious not her audience. It's not her intended audience for this masterpiece that she has made. But I do feel a little bit bad that she's not getting the recognition that she is that she's after, because the other people that she's showing it to just they don't get it, because it is a gift that is directly made for Jim.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So you went homemade this year.
Yep.
Yeah. Money problems. Is that what this is about? I mean, oh dear, I don't think we can help you out.
No. Jim had a great year, actually. I just wanted to get your opinion.
Are you good at homemade?
Look at this.
Yeah.
She kind of gets shot down, and I think that makes her a little unsure about the gift. And when she goes to give it to Jim, she tries to downplay it. And part of that is what Jim gets her. But very clearly, she's lost some self-assurance about this.
Yeah, because there's this whole thing that Jim gives amazing gifts, that they're always so thoughtful and very, very personal. And so she's enjoying the process, and like the idea that she's put in this much work and care into Jim's gift because he always puts that much work and care into hers. Mm-hmm. And I really like this part of their relationship, because it really does show like the appreciation. And I really love that in a relationship. I think that that's really an important thing for people to have with people that they care about. And when it comes to the gift exchange, Jim ends up giving her a box, and she thinks it might be pebbles from Jamaica or something like that. And she opens it up, and it's a diamond bracelet.
Yep, I do make great Christmas gifts, but I couldn't make that.
And I think it's kind of also a reflection of the great year that he had, that he is able to, you know, give Pam kind of this extraordinary gift this year as like a token of his love and appreciation. And it really surprises her in a very good way.
Yeah, she's really taken aback by it. I get the sense that she hasn't ever gotten a gift like this. Right. Roy doesn't seem like the jewelry type.
I mean, he got her a knockoff iPod. So.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, like, yeah. Not the best gift giver, maybe. And this is clearly something new for them, as their, you know, financials have been good this year. And as impressed and as happy as she is with her gift, I think Jim is even more so with what Pam made him.
The Adventures of Jimmy Halpert. Oh my God. This is awesome. That's my bike. That's my desk. And that is my daughter.
Pam gets the reaction from Jim that she was looking for from everyone else in the office the whole rest of the day. And he goes through the pages. He notices all the little details. He points out the drawings. He can't believe how cool it is. he really gives her the feedback she has been looking for. And you can just see it, the pride on her face. And then we see an even deeper level of his love for the gift during a confessional when the camera catches him being kind of speechless about it.
I mean,
I love these gifts that they exchange to each other and the way it was played out, because in the beginning of the episode, it was so downplayed. Oh, you know, I didn't really have a lot of time this year. And then we see this great reveal at the end of the episode.
I think that, does that do it? What else do we have left?
There's still a little bit about Jada and Daryl. I mean, we can kind of rope that into their story kind of resolved with also gift giving, where there was a moment down in the warehouse where Pam and Andy try and make the party fun for Jada, and Andy does this whole Grinch thing, totally ruins it by having like boring political questions. he had like a game going on where like find the Christmas star, but then revealed in like 3 seconds that it was behind Jada's ear. Like Andy clearly has no clue how to make things fun for kids. And even Pam and Daryl are like, well, that was a waste.
Because the star is right behind her ear.
And the game's over seconds later.
But Daryl and Jada end up accidentally finding their own fun, because Daryl was going to buy Jada a snack from the vending machine, and they get this really fun, silly idea to like buy out the vending machine, and they have all of these snacks, and they end up going around the office and handing them out as Christmas gifts. And Jada hands out the gifts, and Daryl's helping her carry everything. It's actually really sweet, and it's one of those like crazy kid things that like when an adult says like, we're gonna literally buy everything in this vending machine, that's like, what like, it's like one of those cool, amazing things that like, it's not a ton of money, but it is like this fantasy thing that they did together. And Jada ended up having a great time at the party.
Yeah, she did. And we mentioned that Michael ends up putting the Santa suit on and does the Santa thing for Jada. I like that, because we got to always see what Creed does. Creed is sitting in the break room when they come in.
What do you want, baby? We got some granola, some cupcakes, chips, apples.
We have a whole room of vending machines.
I know. Isn't it something?
And then he doesn't accept the snacks that Jada wants to give him and like steals some Sun Chips off the top.
I mean, they were, Sun Chips are better.
No, Sun Chips are the worst.
What? Oh, yes. We're going to have it out. I love Sun Chips. I don't know. Sun Chips versus Funyuns. Oh, that's a whole nother show.
You have another podcast to rate.
I have another podcast where I can rate chips. but before we leave, we should check back in with the senator, the state senator.
Oh, he's doing some checking.
Oh, is he checking things out? All right. Which our Oscar definitely notices and very casually brings up in a confessional.
Robert seems great. He's very handsome, firm handshake. He's gay, good sense of humor.
We also see him check out Ryan. Ryan comes in the conference room to like complain there's not a bartender or something stupid.
Yeah, and he's looking for a hipster drink that nobody knows how to make.
Yeah, and then Robert checks him out as he walks away.
Yep, confirming Oscar's suspicions, and we do see Oscar noticing that the senator is checking out Ryan, and this becomes a quite a major plot point in Angela and the senator's future relationship.
Yeah. We're coming back to that. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. They wouldn't let that go.
No.
So that's our long double episode. So much happens. Holly's back. Jim is terrorized. Cool gifts were exchanged. Jada had a good Christmas with Daryl. Yeah, so that's our giant Christmas double episode. We did it.
We did.
Aaron still doesn't get it.
Aaron just doesn't like her.
No.
And we're going to go straight into kind of part two of this, because next week we're going to talk about the ultimatum.
Yep, episode 13, The Ultimatum, which will bring us into the new year. We will be starting 2011. So, all right, well, Stephen, next time we'll be back. And until then, you can go and find us over on Twitter at @tall_beats, or you can find us individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable. And you can hear our special episode all about the Christmas episodes of The Office with our crossover with my other show, Top Four, where Stephen and Mary and Marco and I discuss all of the Christmas episodes, and you can see where this one fell in our rankings. And you can also join us in the conference room if you become a member. So the membership doesn't only get you our special bonus episode, it gets you bonus feeds from all of The Incomparable and access to the conference room, our members only Slack, where we talk about The Office and also any of the other Slacks in there. You can join with the members and talk about all kinds of things. So all right, see you in the new year, Stephen.